The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
This goes out to the Muslim armies. What are you waiting for? Jihad is responsibility on you. Wipe out that Zionist entity. How dare they occupy the Masjid al-Aqsa? How dare they speak to our Muslim? How dare they? And they've got no honor in you. The Muslim youth here, we the Muslims in the West, we are with you. We make dua for you. Make jihad fi sabilillah. Remove the Zionists. You have these armies and tents. What for? Remove them. And you Zionist entity will be no more. We don't fear anyone but Allah. We don't fear the United Nations, British government. We don't give a damn. We only fear Allah.
Just, I guess, a Londoner. That's in North London, one of the protests in the UK. Someone there calling for the extermination of the Jews. That's going on the streets of London. Here in the United States, you have these roving bands of pro-Palestinian, I guess, call them protesters, now maybe rioters, attacking Jews in Los Angeles. It's like that Telegraph headline that I alluded to yesterday. What's going on in London shows anti-Semitism is still the only acceptable form of racism. It's accepted. You can get away with that. If your hatred is aimed at Jews, or really we can add to that, if you hate white people in America or in the UK, that's quite all right, I guess. They're still taking a knee in the Premier League in the UK. That was brought on by the George Floyd episode from last year. And so all last summer, all through this season for the Premier League, it's about over now. But both teams, they've been taking knees before they play the game. They're trying to stamp out racism. They're trying to stamp it out all across the UK. And this is going on right in the midst of London. And I told you about the cars traveling through Jewish communities on bullhorns, saying, rape the Jewish women, rape their daughters. There was a story just yesterday, Mayor Lightfoot in Chicago. She's agreed to one-on-one interviews now, but only with black or brown journalists. No white journalists for the mayor of Chicago. This is probably not just okay. This is probably something that will win her praise. We're so sensitive. We're supposed to be about all things racist. And look at what's going on in our own nations. Even as we self-righteously say that we're trying to stamp out racism. This we tolerate. This we're fine with. We have a lot to get to on today's program. You're listening, of course, to The Trumpet Daily. You can get to our program every day live at our website, thetrumpet.com/live. You can also send us some feedback, td@kpcg.fm. Coming up in this segment, I want to get to the so-called January 6th commission. They're trying to push for this. The Democrats are. They want this. They want to give as much life as possible to the so-called armed insurrection. So we'll talk more on that in just a bit. And we'll also continue with our study of Isaiah chapter 1, perhaps a little bit into chapter 2. But first, now that we calm down a little bit over what's happening in our nations, I want to get to the Arizona recount. The Maricopa County recount, lots going on in the news with these hearings and such. We've got a brief update on the Antrim County case up in Michigan. But first, let's go to Rachel Maddow. As I've told you all through the past 5-6 episodes, you have the propaganda media They're covering this in full form. I think it dominated Rachel Maddow's show last night. This dangerous recount in Arizona, as she puts it. And meanwhile, conservative media, well, they're not talking about it at all. I guess they don't care. I guess they just want to move on. This is Rachel Maddow from her show last night, clip two.
And it's interesting, that has been unfolding over the course of this last 24 hours, even as there was big news about the other one of these nonsense Trump election fraud fantasy quests that the Trump loyalist Republicans have been pursuing across the country. This includes that same super serious firm called the Cyber Ninjas that Arizona Republicans hired to run their recount clown show in Arizona. In addition to them messing with the ballots, what they're doing with the election results in Arizona, they have been pursuing a court case in Michigan, a county called Antrim County, Michigan. And in the Michigan instance, they have also been alleging all these same bizarre conspiracies and fantasies about how Trump secretly won re-election, even though it looks like he lost, because something, something, bamboo, something, something, communism, Venezuela, Mike Flynn, buy my pillow, something, something.
There's Rachel Maddow last night making fun of the recount. And yet, within that same segment, I think she had more than one segment, she also talks about how long this is going to go into the summer. I think they're down, they're through maybe 20% of these ballots, and there's other things that they want to examine as well. But what's the problem if they're just looking for bamboo residue? Well, you get to the end of the recount, and the Republicans, those in charge of the audit, they're just going to look like fools, I guess. So why worry about it? She's worried. She's worried. This is from Arizona Central. It says, Doug Logan, CEO of Cyber Ninjas, the Florida-based firm the Senate has hired to run the process, said he expected counting to be completed by the end of June when the Senate's new lease on the facility expires. So that takes us through another 5-6 weeks. It says, looming over the meeting, and it talks about this meeting. Remember that the president of the Senate called for this hearing. And the county officials on Monday, they came out with a blistering response. They demanded that the recount would be stopped. They told the president of the Senate, you've got to end this for the good of the country. And oh, by the way, the ones conducting this audit, they're incompetent. They're causing all kinds of trouble. They don't know what they're doing. This is dangerous. This is a dangerous trend. Well, it says here, looming over the meeting was the Senate's claim last week that the county deleted a directory of computer files it was ordered to provide. But Ben Cotton, former founder of Cypher, a firm involved in the process, said Tuesday that he has the files. It says here, all of this may be a moot point because subsequently I've been able to recover all of those deleted files and I have access to that data. So the file, the database that went missing, now suddenly they have it. He was able to, his firm was able to recover it, as it says in that piece. Here's another one from Arizona Central. Notice this, it says, the Arizona Senate is considering expanding its audit of Maricopa County ballots cast in 2020 election to include all contests, not just for president and the U.S. Senate. So they're prepared. This is what Rachel Maddow is so worried about. Top to bottom, a forensic audit from top to bottom, all the way through. She's not worried about bamboo residue. She's worried about an actual recount. She's worried about them counting these hundreds of thousands of new voters that were registered just last year, over the last few years. It says, audit organizers now say they want to test county voting machines by examining results from all of the races. We're looking with other companies to do a machine tabulation of all the races on the ballot to compare with the Dominion tabulation back in November, said Ken Bennett, who's serving as the Senate's audit liaison. We've played a few clips from him in the past. It says, we will be looking at the images of all 2.1 million ballots. It says, finally, the examination would not involve a physical recount like the one underway in Arizona. Rather, it would be a separate audit using digital images of each ballot said Bennett. So the audit, the forensic audit, the recount continues there in Maricopa County and could expand. Now, as to this case in Antrim County, yesterday, Judge Eisenheimer, I guess is his name, he made a decision to dismiss DiPerno, I forget his first name, Matthew, I believe, DiPerno's case, this constitutional attorney that was representing an ordinary citizen of Michigan. So this judge throws that case out. The lawyer says that he's going to appeal the decision, and so we'll see where that takes him. He, along the way, by the way, has been pleading with Republicans in the state legislature to just look at the evidence that he's viewed himself, the evidence of fraud that he's uncovered in this small Michigan county that's going on in Michigan. Today, you've got Vernon Jones in Georgia. He's running for governor against Governor Kemp. And he tweeted out earlier today, he said, "Today I'm officially issuing my call for a full and forensic audit of Georgia's 2020 election. It says, while Brian Kemp continues to sit on the sidelines, I will continue to be on the front lines for the security of our election." So he's calling for a full forensic audit down in Georgia. And again, this is not just some commentator who's a talking head on radio or TV. He's running for governor. So, I mean, he's campaigning on this. A proper recount. I'm not sure when that election comes up. It's probably in a couple of years. But notice the statement that he put out, Vernon Jones. It says, "If Mr. Kemp genuinely wants to represent the voters who elected him into office, he would insist on a transparent, unbiased forensic audit. Georgians still have questions about irregularities found in the 2020 election, and they deserve answers. We must get to the bottom of all this and other irregularities to restore trust in our election process." It says, "If Mr. Kemp refuses to demand an audit, then I will, when I'm elected, to replace him." So we'll see. Who has the support of the people? I think that's why these Republicans in Arizona are as bold and as courageous as they are, because they know. They know they have the support of Arizonans. They know it. And Vernon Jones knows it as well in the case of Georgians. There's a groundswell of support for someone that would just come along and say, we have to restore our elections to a state of honesty and integrity. So we've got to look into all of these irregularities. Meanwhile, the major media, the propaganda media, they're out in full force to try to tell you how dangerous this is, why this is just a continuation of the insurrection. This is a continuation of what happened on January the 6th, and they're doing all that they can to try to get as much out of this big lie, to use President Trump's terms, to get as much out of this big lie as they possibly can. Listen to Joe Scarborough. He comes from the propaganda media as well, and here he's talking about the January 6th protest, clip 9.
As somebody, Casey, who was there, you know full well, as do all of these members who were lying to their constituents. These weren't just tourists ambling through, taking pictures of statues in statutory hall or rubbing Will Rogers' shoe for good luck. They were there looking to find people, hurt people, kill cops, almost killed quite a few.
Almost killed quite a few. Who died on that day? Who was killed on that day? That would be an unarmed woman, a veteran, Ashley Babbitt. The only one. There's Scarborough, though, saying, look, they were trying. We're going to show some footage if we have time. And Congress, Tucker Carlson made this point last night. Congress has all kinds, hundreds of hours of footage that they could release to the public right now. If we really wanted to get in, okay, they want a commission. We've got to really investigate every angle of this. Well, release the footage then. The footage that's all around the Capitol. And let us see how violent it was. Let us see how many policemen they almost killed. Let's see it. Let's see the evidence. We've heard from the propagandists. This is from a blogger at Substack commenting on this push to have a January 6th commission to just try to keep this story alive for as long as is possible. This false narrative. It says the commission will have powers to issue subpoenas requiring the attendance and testimony of witnesses and the production of evidence relating to any matter which the commission is empowered to investigate. It's basically just to give Nancy Pelosi and the people in the House of Representatives more power to persecute Trump supporters. That's what it amounts to. More power to go after their political enemies as if they don't have enough. We've already seen the DOJ fully weaponized, FBI, and on it goes. Look at the intelligence community. Look at what they were doing with the Steele dossier. You've got this big expose, as I covered yesterday. It's even in the New York Times, exposing Chris Steele as a fraud. And yet, the Steele dossier was used. It was carried right into the FISA court. It was used as a pretext to spy on Donald Trump and his campaign and his presidency. That's scandalous behavior. That's illegal behavior. That's unconstitutional. That's an attack. That's an insurrection. That's an attack on a sitting president of the United States. And for 4 years, the entire country had to go through it. Russia, Russia, Russia. This blogger, another one at Technofog, he said, if you question the seriousness of the game they're playing, these Democrats that want to now get a commission so that they can go after Trump supporters all the more, if you question their seriousness, just look at the security around the Capitol. Currently, he wrote this back in March, but still, it's a good point. Currently, over 5,000 National Guard troops, along with fencing and razor wire, protect against a non-existent threat. It says the occupation is theater to make January 6th more than what it was, to justify what is to come. The National Guard, you see, they were there for months, the razor wire, all of that. We've got to, I mean, it's good theater to send the message that this is a war zone, that these Trump supporters are dangerous, that they nearly took over the government, that they killed a lot of people in the process. And it's all a lie. It's all a lie. They want more power so that they can go after their political enemies. That's what it amounts to. Listen to this exchange. This is on MSNBC just the other day, clip 10.
The Republican Party has just become the sort of cover for what is a violent, anti-government, authoritarian militia. That's what we saw on January 6th. And those groups, because so many people were not arrested, because so many of those people managed to leave and get home and fly to vacations and everything else like that, they're plotting their next attack. Why wouldn't they? They haven't been held accountable. So whether it's Liz Cheney or anybody else, I'm tired of people saying this is bad and dangerous. It's been over 120 days since that attack, and I still haven't seen any members of Congress who were supposedly giving insurrectionist tours the day beforehand taken to jail. I don't think this country is taking this seriously, and until something else terrible happens, unfortunately, I don't think they will.
Wow. Now, I guess he wants members of Congress going to jail as well. Remember, the DOJ, this was their biggest investigation in the history of that agency. They arrested something like 400 Trump supporters. Many of them are rotting in jail even as we speak. For what? Disorderly conduct, trespassing. Any of them in there for sedition? Here's one. This is a talking head on MSNBC. Say, hey, we can't stop there. We've got to go after members of Congress. Conservatives, he means. We're not taking it serious enough? Is he serious? They haven't been held accountable? Is he serious? Listen to Marjorie Taylor. She was on the floor of the House yesterday defending defending Donald Trump supporters and just making a simple comparison. Okay, you want to go on and on and on about this being an insurrection. What about everything that happened last summer? This is clip six.
Mr. Speaker, I rise in opposition to the commission to study the events of January 6th, as well as spending $2 billion in security supplemental. The question that comes to mind is this. What about all the riots that happened during the summer of 2020 after the death of George Floyd? What about all the damage caused to federal buildings, churches, people's businesses, and innocent people that were killed, like David Dorn? This past summer, Minneapolis city officials estimate 700 buildings were damaged, burned, or destroyed, including 360 local businesses. Riots caused an estimated $55 million in damages in Minneapolis alone. BLM and Antifa established an autonomous zone in Seattle and attempted to burn government buildings in Portland. Is that not an insurrection?
Yeah, see, she's exactly right. You see what went on in Portland, and then starting an autonomous zone in Seattle, burning down Minneapolis. How many of those people, the perpetrators in those cases, how many of them are rotting in jail? Kamala Harris tried to get him out of jail the next day. What does Joe Scarborough think about those thugs? What does he think about those rioters, those demonstrators? President Trump said yesterday, he's aiming this at Republicans, weak Republicans who are inclined to just step aside, let the Democrats have their little commission so that they can keep this in the news for as long as it's possible. Donald Trump said Republicans in the House and Senate should not approve the Democrat trap of the January 6th commission. It's just more partisan unfairness, and unless the murders, riots, and firebombings in Portland, Minneapolis, Seattle, Chicago, and New York are also going to be studied, this discussion should be ended immediately. Republicans must get much tougher and much smarter and stop being used by the radical left. They're being used by these radicals. As I've said so many times before, unless you stand up to them, they will crush you. They will destroy you. You look at what they tried to do with the impeachment proceedings, just made a mockery of the Constitutional Republic. Impeaching for a phone call, impeaching for a speech. A speech in which he said, "Let's peacefully protest." And they impeached him. They impeached him for that. This was some footage that surfaced a few days ago. The exchange that some of these Trump protesters had inside of Congress on January 6th with the police. Police that were inclined to just, like the one standing next to Ashley Babbitt, yeah, we'll let you go ahead and bust your way through that window and walk down that hallway. The police just stepped aside. And here's a police officer basically saying, look, you guys are okay as long as you behave. Everything's fine. This is clip 11.
Listen up. The police here are willing to work with us and cooperate peacefully, like our First Amendment allows. Gather more Americans under the condition that they will come and gather peacefully to discuss what needs to be done to save our country. Everybody, this must be peaceful.
This has to be peaceful. We have the right to peacefully assemble.
There's the Viking hat guy. He's telling everybody it has to be peaceful. You know what would be interesting is just contrasting that video you saw right there with any of about 100 videos that you could find from last summer in Minneapolis, New York City, Chicago, Portland, Seattle. Where people were, in the case of Seattle, how many people died in the autonomous zone? I think it was one or two. People were murdered. They tried to destroy buildings in Portland. And Portland is still suffering. It's pretty much over, as that report from Portland last week pointed out. Here are these insurrectionists in there having a nice discussion with the Capitol Hill police, saying, look, can we come in here and exercise our First Amendment rights? And the police, yeah, fine, as long as you behave. Now, some of them obviously did misbehave, but only one person was fatally shot in those few hours on the afternoon of January the 6th. And that would be one of the protesters. Gunned down by a Capitol Hill police officer. You saw some other police officers right there who said, yeah, you guys can come right on in. And since that time, the DOJ has put something like 400 people in jail. This is from Julie Kelly at American Greatness. She's one of the few that even cares about these victims. It says, I've been in solitary confinement for 100 days now and haven't been convicted of any crime with no end in sight. That was part of a lengthy message Jacob Lang sent to his father the last week of April. Jacob was arrested on January 16th in New York and charged with several crimes related to his activity in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. So he's rotting away in the D.C. jailhouse. A lot of it's solitary confinement, as I've gone through with you before. Julie Kelly says, so far, more than 400 people have been arrested in the nationwide manhunt with more charges to come. And at the same time, emerging evidence proves law enforcement allowed protesters to enter and remain in the building. You can see that from the footage I just played for you. And there's a nationwide manhunt. And a talking head on MSNBC laughably insists that we're not taking this seriously enough. Even as all the rioters and the thugs of last year are out on the streets still, after they've burned and looted and robbed, and in some cases murdered their fellow Americans. A January 6th commission? What about a June, July, August commission looking into the details of what happened last year? A two-tiered standard of justice. We talk about that often. One last story here. I just want to remind you of the revelation from the Daily Telegraph. Earlier this week, I went through the story yesterday, these scientists that have now come out and said, you know, when we tried to scare you last year, we're sorry about that because it was kind of totalitarian. It was kind of unethical. And we feel kind of guilty now. Here are the experts, some of them, the experts coming forward saying, sorry, we scared you to death. That really wasn't the ethical way to approach this pandemic. Well, now we're supposedly near the end of it. Still an incredible pressure to get everybody vaccinated. But finally, the CDC, they announced last week that you can pull off the mask if you've gotten the double jab. And this is quite a moment for us. We've been waiting for this. And what are we finding? Well, there's a lot of people that just can't seem to let go of the mask. They love it. If you can believe it, they're vaccinated and keeping their masks on maybe forever, says the New York Times. Wow, what a moment. What a moment. This is, again, from the New York Times. The New York Times has been on quite the roll of late. It's another fairly solid article. The quip says, face coverings have been a political flashpoint for more than a year, but now the backlash is directed at people who don't plan to take them off. Listen to this MSNBC guest. She's been vaccinated. The CDC has came out last week and revised the guidelines on mask wearing. And yet still, listen to what she says about her habits with respect to mask wearing. Clip 3.
But if you go into kind of an indoor retail, poorly ventilated, or any sort of setting that doesn't have great ventilation, obviously the children need to wear masks. And honestly, I'm going to wear masks too. My kids are too young to understand mommy's vaccinated, you're not. And I have to keep them socially distant, so I'm going to do it with them.
Well, I'm just going to keep wearing the mask so that my children can see that I have it on. In other words, it's not because of the science. It's theater. It's theater. It's all for show. Just like Dr. Fauci admitted the other day. What a fraud. Rand Paul was right. Rand Paul called him out on it a while back. He said, if you've been vaccinated, then what you do with the single, even a double mask, is just theater. Fauci didn't like that, but it's the truth. This New York Times article, it says, whenever Joe Glickman heads out for groceries, he places an N95 mask over his face and tugs a cloth mask on top of it. He then pulls on a pair of goggles. This man is vaccinated. It says he has used this safety protocol for the past 14 months. It did not change after he contracted the coronavirus last November. He's gotten COVID. He's gotten the double jab. He wears an N95 mask and then a cloth mask on top and goggles. And I guess the New York Times is reporting on this as if there's other people like this. They just can't let go of the mask. They can't take it off. It says it didn't budge when earlier this month he became fully vaccinated. And even though President Biden said on Thursday that fully vaccinated people do not have to wear a mask, Mr. Glickman said he planned to stay on the course. In fact, he said he plans to do his grocery run double-masked and goggled for at least the next 5 years. This is not the Babylon Bee. It's not the Onion. This is the New York Times. 5 years of mask wearing. Fully vaccinated. He's already had COVID. I mean, this is like a religious cult, isn't it? It's a cult. It's a faith. Their faith is in science, falsely so-called, as the Apostle Paul put it. I got to get into that scripture at a later time. I keep referring to it. A lot of bad science in the world today. The New York Times says, for people like Mr. Glickman, a combination of anxiety, murky information about new virus variants, and the emergence of an obdurate and sizable faction of vaccine holdouts means mask-free life is on hold. Possibly forever. We might just have to put it on forever. And you know what this will come down to eventually? The reason I'm putting it on, even though I've had the disease and I've had the vaccine, is because those dirty anti-vaxxers that are out there, they're dangerous. A lot of them vote for Trump as well. They're so dangerous. I got to do it just to protect myself from them. Well, but you had the vaccine. You're okay. Well, but still, I've got to do it to show just how righteous I am in this religious cult and how evil they are. It says in the New York Times, a few say that they've been surprised to find that they've grown to enjoy being hidden behind a mask, expressionless and anonymous. I mean, really, the society around us, we've been heading in this direction for some time, where we barely look at, particularly in big cities, we barely look at people. We don't say hi to our neighbors. We huddle into our house. I'm talking about before lockdown. We're just glued to our gadgets. We don't know how to interact with people anymore. I mean, you can see the devil is behind this. There's reason people are paranoid. They're worried about sickness. They don't know about the science. They're worried about the evil conservative. But the Times here brings up another good point, I think, about how people have gotten, they've gotten used to the fact that they're hidden. When they put on the mask, they can pretty much just remain anonymous. It says, as a woman, this quotes some lady, as a woman, we feel like we have to, when we go out in public, put on a little bit of makeup, eyeliner, blush, says this 57-year-old attorney from Florida, who is vaccinated and does not plan to stop wearing a mask. And it quotes her as saying, with a mask, I don't have to. It simplified my life. With a mask, I don't have to present myself. I don't have to do myself up with makeup. Well, you shouldn't put that. That's a mask as well, but that's another story. We'll get into that at some other time. But she just likes to put on the mask. It simplified things for her. There's a story out of Spiked Online. This is regarding Britain. It says Britain is suffering from freedom hesitancy. So even as the barriers finally come up, even as we're told you can finally take off the mask, you can finally open up the pub, you've got people really coming out, you know, just like a cat coming out of a hole after he's been frightened, walking slowly to see if there's any other dangers. It says lockdown has become a way of life for many people. Pubs, bars, restaurants, and other venues open their doors today for the first time all year. It says, yet the excitement is distinctly muted. On the same day the government is legalizing a vast range of social activities, the prime minister is urging a heavy dose of caution. So the doors are open, but be careful. Be careful. You've still got to be worried. You've still got to be fearful. You've got to exercise caution. It says, of course, what's on offer is very limited, a very limited version of freedom. But this is our reaction. This is how we're coming out of it. It says here, finally, but even this cautious reopening is still too much for some. The clouds of gloom are gathering on the horizon once again. Experts doing the media rounds warn that while you may be allowed to go to the pub or enjoy some close social contact, you shouldn't if you want to stay safe. So the experts are still out there, still scaring you to death. And some few honest experts have even come forward and admitted that, well, yes, we did try to scare you to death so that you would be more obedient and compliant. It certainly worked. So much so that now people are suffering from freedom hesitancy. We're just not so sure we should come out of lockdown or take off the mask. You're listening to Stephen Flory, and this is The Trumpet Daily. You can submit feedback to the show if you like. TD at kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe. And it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
On yesterday's show, we read through those couple of verses in Isaiah 1, verses 9 and 10, about God's assessment of our society today. The nations of Israel in particular, Ephraim and Manasseh, little Judah. He says we're like Sodom and Gomorrah. And it's from the leaders all the way down to the ordinary sheeple. Sickness from head to toe. and this is what we've got to come out of or be healed of when coming into God's family, when coming into God's church. Isaiah 1 and verse 16, it says, "Wash you, make you clean, put away the evil of your doings from before mine eyes," it says. "Cease to do evil." As we covered last week, I believe it was Friday's program, Isaiah, he had to be purged and purified and cleansed first before God could use him. He had to be washed. He had to be cleaned, spiritually speaking. And then God used him to go out and to warn in love. And he said, look, wash you, make you clean, put away the evil of your doings. Come out. Come out of her, my people, and be you separate. Separate from the world, separate from the filth of the world. Verse 17 continues, learn to do well, seek judgment, relieve the oppressed, judge the fatherless, plead for the widow. Notice it says you have to learn how to do it. That's why salvation is a process. That's why God brings us into his church and starts to feed us and teach us, educate us, train us. We have to learn to do well. That's why studying our Bibles, that's why it's so important. That's the how-to manual. That's the instruction book. God wants to teach us his ways. God is creator, yes. He's also educator and ruler. So he gives us his truth. He gives us his instruction so that we know how to live, so that we learn how to do well. Isaiah 28 and verse 9, I'll just read that for you. It says, whom shall he teach knowledge, and whom shall he make to understand doctrine? Them that are weaned from the milk and drawn from the breasts. See, God will give us the know-how that we're seeking if we're maturing spiritually, if we're learning to do well. God gives us that help, that he'll give us power as well through his Spirit, opening our minds to the truth so that we can not only read what it says in the Bible, but actually understand it. Learn to do well. Seek judgment. Relieve the oppressed. It says, judge the fatherless. Plead for the widow. Here's what my father has to say about that last bit in the Isaiah booklet. He writes, we are to plead for the Laodicean widow. The Laodicean leaders have led God's church away from Christ. The Philadelphia church has the responsibility to plead or to fight for that church. The PCG warns and tries to help God's people reject the false doctrines taught by their leaders. God commands that we do so. God commands that we reach out to those who have been deceived or that have just gone along with this great falling away from the truth. So that's why that this church is here. In so many ways, it's here to warn. It's here to reach out in love. It's here to plead. To plead to those who are fatherless. They've lost contact with their Father in heaven. Verse 18, here's part of the pleading. It says, come now and let us reason together, saith the Eternal. Though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. Though they be red like crimson, they shall be as wool. Come and reason with God. This is what true education actually is. Reasoning together with God. The world doesn't know anything about this kind of education. They reject it. Stop following and trusting in man and trust God. Reason together with God. Trusting in man gets us the world you hear about every day in the first segment. It's just chaotic, disorganized, unhappy, miserable, afraid. Afraid of taking off a mask. Afraid of going out to the pub. 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 4. I'll just read a couple of verses from Paul's epistle. It says, "For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds." It says, "Casting down imaginations," verse 5, "and everything that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ." Even our thoughts need to be purified. This takes some true education. This takes learning the truth of God, learning His ways. This takes a lot of reasoning together with God. 1 Peter 4 and verse 1, I'll read this to you. It says, "For as much then as Christ has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind. For he that has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin." Arm yourself with this mind of Christ. Reason together with the great Creator God. That's what true education is all about. Back to Isaiah 1, talks about, again, verse 18, reason together with God. And then verse 19 continues, if you be willing and obedient, you shall eat the good of the land. But if you refuse and rebel, you shall be devoured with the sword, for the mouth of the Eternal has spoken it. If we reason together with God and obey Him, then God's going to give us the best of everything. God's going to pour down blessings upon us. Blessings from heaven, just like Malachi 3 brings out. Read the end of Deuteronomy 30. Blessing and cursing. If you obey, you're blessed. If you disobey and sin, you're cursed. And that's what he's saying right here in verse 20. It says, "You shall be devoured by the sword if you refuse God's truth and rebel against Him." That's what's coming upon our nations. That's what's coming upon the Laodiceans. If they refuse, if they rebel, they will be devoured with the sword. You see, it's an instrument of correction, that sword that God raises up. Verse 21 says, How is the faithful city become an harlot? It was full of judgment, righteousness lodged in it, but now murderers. See, how did it happen? It used to be full of righteousness, but look at what it is today, sickness through and through. It all starts with transgression. It all starts with sin, iniquity. And it spreads, like Paul said in 1 Corinthians 5. It spreads like leaven in a lump of bread. It spreads like cancer inside of a human body. Verse 22, it says, "Your silver is become dross, your wine mixed with water." Everything's degenerate now. There's no value left. "Your princes are rebellious and companions," it says, "of thieves. Everyone loves gifts and follows after rewards. They judge not the fatherless, neither does the cause of the widow come unto them." See, everyone's just in it for themselves. The princes, the leaders, in other words, they're rebellious. They're companions of thieves. You look at all the corruption in government today. You look into the lives even of some of these leaders in government. And you wonder why there's so many people who still want to put their faith and their trust in the nanny state. They want the government to take care of everything for them. And meanwhile, the government's headed up by so many people who are just corrupt through and through. Here again, I don't want to return back to segment one, but you certainly get enough of that in the opening segment on this program. Chapter 2 in Isaiah. Notice this, verse 2, it says, "And it shall come to pass in the last days." So we know this book is for the end time. It says, "It shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Eternal's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it." This is a millennial passage. Isaiah here is discussing the the establishment of God's kingdom on this earth. And it's going to be established in our time, in our day. It says, and many people shall go and say, come you, and let us go up to the mountain of the eternal, to the house of the God of Jacob. And he will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the eternal from Jerusalem. This pictures a time when everyone will come and reason together with God. Everyone will receive true education, right education, a godly education. Verse 4 says, and he shall judge among the nations and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation, it says, shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. What a contrast. What a contrast. Verse 4 says, they won't learn war anymore. What was the verse in chapter 1 where it says, learn, verse 17, learn to do well. People don't learn that today. They learn to war. They learn to fight. They learn to hate. Just like that protester in London. He hates the Jews. He wants the Jews exterminated. This is not some, you know, boundary difference that they're trying to sort out that escalated into fighting. The reason Hamas lobs rockets into Israel is because they want to wipe Israel out. And you just heard it from one of the protesters in London. That's the goal. They don't accept a Jewish state, period. And they hate the Jews. And they want to exterminate them. And they proudly say that. And not even a slap on the wrist coming from the government. Coming from the government that, whether it's the UK or the United States, so sensitive to any and all things racist, except when it comes to anti-Semitism, or except when it comes to whites in general, whether in the United States or Britain. Verse 6, it says, therefore, you have forsaken your people, the house of Jacob, because they be replenished from the east and are soothsayers like the Philistines, it says, and they please themselves and the children of strangers, it says. Their land also is full of silver and gold, neither is there any end of their treasures. Their land is also full of horses, neither is there any end of their chariots. See, all of this wealth, all of this prosperity, I mean, it's beginning to evaporate away, as we well know. You can't just print off trillions of dollars and expect the dollar to hold its value. But still, we've been spoiled. So much wealth, so many gadgets, so many nice homes and cars. The biggest homes in the world right here in the United States. Big cars, big everything, expensive. We live like kings used to live. But what have we done with it? Have we given God thanks? Romans 1 says we haven't. We're unthankful. We're ungrateful. We're unholy. That's what Isaiah 1 and 2 is all about. Well, there's more where that came from. Chapter 3 says much the same. Verse 8, it says, their land is also full of idols. They worship and work. They worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. Our land, you see, all this wealth, all of this prosperity, and all of this idolatry, and all of these lofty looks, as verse 11 brings out, and all of this upside-down family living, as Isaiah 3 brings out, all of this upside-down lifestyle, as Isaiah 5 brings out, calling evil good and good evil. Do you long for the day that's described in verses 2 through 4? Verses 2 through 4. Verse 2 again, it says, and it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Eternal's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. That's speaking of the earthly headquarters during the millennium, established at the outset of God's kingdom on earth. Jerusalem and Jesus Christ, of course, returning to this earth, returning to the Mount of Olives as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, this world, and all the nations of this world, the United States, the UK, little Judah. We need the government of God, desperately so. We need God's kingdom on earth. We need a righteous ruler and king. We need a righteous king priest who will administer the loving government of God, the laws of God. We desperately need the family of God. Here's the solution to all of the problems of the world today. It's God's family. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can write us, td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.